This is River to River. I'm Dean Borg, sitting in for Ben Kiefer. Today, focusing on transferring veterans from battlefields to classrooms and work sites. During the coming hour, conversations with Iowans who are making it their business to help servicemen and women after they leave active duty. It isn't as easy as changing clothes, swapping a military uniform and a rifle for casual dress and a textbook. We'll hear what Iowa Workforce Development is doing to get veterans hired, and what university staff and students are doing to help veterans succeed in classrooms. Serving veterans after they've served us, right after the NPR News. This is River to River. I'm Dean Borg, sitting in for Ben Kiefer today. We're going to be talking about veterans affairs and hiring veterans, getting them educated after they have served their nation. Talking with me right now is Bob Loader. He's the Veterans Program Coordinator at Iowa Workforce Development. Hello, Bob.
Hello, Dean.
Say, what is your focus in coordinating veterans programs with Iowa Workforce Development? Why does that position exist?
Well, we have 16 veteran representatives all across the state of Iowa, and they're located in all the workforce centers out there, and their job is to assist veterans overcoming barriers to employment and help them find employment. I'm the technical resource for those veteran representatives, and I handle most all of the administrative duties, reporting duties, things like that for the program.
Now, why is that you have something singled out for one demographic group? Is it because veterans have difficulty assimilating back into the workforce after having been in the military, or is it because a grateful state, a grateful nation, feels they need and deserve assistance in getting a job?
Well, it goes all the way back to the Vietnam era. We are part of what's called the Jobs for Veterans State Grant that does this. We're actually part of public law, Title 38. And that was the idea, that veterans just needed that leg up to get them back into the workforce.
And what is that leg up? They get legal protection, do they not, if they've had a job, had gone into the military, that is, they were in reserves and called up. There is such thing as the Soldier and Sailors Act that has some protection, and there's job protection also in Iowa law.
Well, you're right, and the main law that governs that is the Uniformed Services Employment and Reemployment Rights Act. That does cover anybody who had a job before they left. Many servicemen go into the military without having a job before they left, or they come back from the service, and because of the duty positions they've held, the responsibility levels that they have held while they were in the service, maybe they don't want to return to the job that they had when they got back. Or if they didn't have a job when they left, then we're there to help them get a job that's more commensurate with their abilities.
As a group, do veterans have difficulty getting employment? Now, let's just say that is a level playing field, and that the job opportunities are equal for everybody, and there are jobs available, the unemployment rate is low. Do veterans carry some special baggage?
No, not really. They do not. Let me tell you, right now, the national unemployment rate, as you know, is running about 8%. Well, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and from their latest data in August, all veterans 18 years of age and older run an average unemployment rate of 6.6%. However, that being said, a lot of the new veterans who are returning from deployment, especially those Guard and Reserve folks that come back that did not have a job when they deployed, that unemployment rate is running around 10.9% right now.
And why is that? I go back to that question again. Why is the unemployment rate for veterans higher than the general unemployment rate?
Well, there can be several reasons for that. Employers sometimes are concerned that possibly veterans are going to be redeployed they are hesitant to hire them, thinking if they're still in the Guard or still in the reserves, that they'll be called to active duty again and they'll lose them for a year. There are also issues with when a veteran returns, they can start drawing unemployment when they get back. They are authorized 90 days before they have to return to work. If they do have a job where they can start drawing unemployment, a veteran can go to school when they get back. And during the time that they're in school, they can also draw unemployment. All those things count toward that veteran unemployment rate. So, yes, there is some issues with veterans getting a job, but sometimes that number can be a little misleading.
Do you work directly with employers in trying to overcome some of those we might say, I mean, some of them are true and others are misconceptions, but do you work directly with employers?
I work with employers in the sense that I do presentations around the state trying to educate employers about hiring veterans and how to interview veterans, things like that.
What do you tell them?
Have you got an hour? It's a full hour presentation.
Well, but generally, we're talking about misconceptions here and you trying to encourage them to consider hiring a vet. In a nutshell, what is your, if we can put it this way, your elevator persuasive speech? Now, what would you tell me if I were considering hiring a vet but had a worry about that veteran, he or she, leaving me to go off for 2 weeks for some sort of training or being called back for deployment? What would you tell me? I mean, why would I want to hire a vet?
Well, that would be that's a legitimate concern. That's what I tell you, and I would not try to tell you that that wasn't a concern in the sense that it could happen. What we need to know, though, and what our employers have to understand is that in order to have the military that we have, they need to be able to support those people that are going into the military. They need to be helpful with them and let them work if they're capable of working at that job and they have the skills, and support them when they do and are called to active duty.
What are some of the traits? Now, we've talked maybe about the negatives there. In fact, you brought some of them up, misconceptions. But what are some of the positives that you try to get across to employers about hiring a vet?
Well, some of the main big positives about hiring a veteran and what they bring to the workforce. Veterans are highly disciplined. They're very well trained, very intelligent. They're going to show up to work every day on time, highly skilled.
Skilled, perhaps, in what they learned in the military, but not necessarily for the job for which they're being considered.
Well, then that's one of the things that our people would do, is if they come in to see us and they are looking for a job and that job does not match the skills that they have, then we're going to try to help train them and send them to school get the skills that they need for that particular job. No, there's no way to expect an employer to hire a veteran for a job that veteran's not qualified to do unless that employer can afford to train them either through an apprenticeship program or some other method.
Talking with me right now is Bob Loader. He's the Veterans Program Coordinator at Iowa Workforce Development. I asked you if you talk to potential employers. You said, yes, I give presentations across the state. And you said, have I got an hour to listen to what the presentation is? But on the other hand, do you give some advice also to veterans themselves who are seeking work? Do you have any mechanism for that?
Our veterans representatives do, absolutely. They work with individual veterans one-on-one.
And you don't directly yourself, but maybe you know how they counsel veterans. What advice do they give veterans who are interviewing with potential employers? How to present themselves?
Absolutely. Well, that's it in a nutshell. It's how to present themselves, how to dress, how to shake hands, how to interview, how to do a resume, how to sit in an interview, how to conduct themselves in interview, how to tailor their job search to the kind of work that they are looking for.
Do you also have some hands-on assistance to them in developing resumes and maybe seminars as to how to do an interview?
Absolutely, we do.
And are
all of our workforce centers across the state offer that. The ones that have a veterans representative in those offices, then they get a much more in-depth one-on-one assistance from that vet rep.
In your experience, do you think that veterans have unrealistic expectations coming out of the military and being assimilated back into the workforce?
Yes, some do, yes. For the simple reason that when they are deployed on active duty, many of them have incredibly responsible positions. Positions where they have to make possibly life and death decisions in a split second. And some of those veterans are only 23, 24 years old, some younger than that. So when they, and they're paid well while they're in the service, contrary to a lot of opinion and some of the stories that you hear, but and they're paid well. When they come back to the States, if they have not had a job before they left, they come back, they would like a job that's commensurate with what they were making in the service with the same responsibility level, but maybe they just don't have the skills that apply to the civilian workforce.
Does that
to
also
merit that type of wage?
Does that also, Bob, contribute to the higher than normal unemployment rate among veterans? Is that they expect too much?
Absolutely it is, yes.
What about promotions?
Absolutely.
Because promotions in the military are on merit, yes, but they also on time served. After so many years, you're just nearly automatically considered for the next promotion. You don't have to wait till there's an opening, such as in civilian life. Are there some unrealistic expectations there?
Well, yes. I don't really like to use the word unrealistic for that, but yes, there are some expectations that don't get met, simply because in the military, like you said, most promotion in the early ranks, promotions are almost automatic. Then there's a schedule for promotion, so just like you said, but it's done on merit. The thing that the veteran has is a clearly defined path to what it's going to take to make that promotion. Out in the civilian world, that doesn't happen very often.
Mm-hmm. As you talk with employers and try to encourage them to at least interview veterans, are there questions that employers that you talk with, that you tell them, don't ask about this thing or that thing, are subjects to avoid?
Yes, absolutely there are. There's a few basic questions that we tell them not to ask. One question is, what type of discharge did you have? That's a question that you don't really want to ask a veteran because, go ahead.
You're getting at there, was it honorable or dishonorable?
Right. That's something that usually the only employers that really will ask that question or need to ask that question are employers that are trying to ascertain a veteran's preference status, and those are normally going to be state or federal employers. Also, there's the chance that the veteran could have received a medical discharge, and that might not be something that the veteran wants to reveal.
Other than questions that they have to avoid legally, are there other questions that you just say it's best not to ask about combat duty or something like that?
Absolutely. And the one you just mentioned is it, combat duty. We discourage people from asking that simply because of the relationship that the media has established with that toward PTSD and TBI issues. So that's one you want to stay away from. Another one that they're not supposed to ask is, are you going to be called for active duty anytime soon if they find out that person has been in the Guard or the Reserves?
after they have served their nation. Talking with me right now is Bob Loader. He's the Veterans Program Coordinator at Iowa Workforce Development. We talked about not asking certain questions here, but are there some advantages that you responded earlier, and I'm going to go back and ask this question again right now. As a veteran serves that employer, are there some things that veteran can bring other than a disciplined approach to work, correct dress and neatness and things like that? Are there some things other than job skills and those personal traits that veterans have an advantage over another employee?
One of the big things that veterans have an advantage over a lot of their employees, especially at the beginning level or entry level, is leadership. Veterans are trained in leadership from the day they get off the bus at basic training. They observe those drill sergeants and how they conduct themselves and the leadership skills that those drill sergeants use to get them through the training. Then once the veteran starts to rise in rank, they get trained in leadership. It starts at the rank of corporal, and which is being in the military a couple of years. Then there's others. They'll go to a 2-week course in leadership. Then following that, a 3-week to a month course in leadership. Then there's other leadership courses throughout their military career. But these are not just day courses or weekend courses. These are 2- and 3-month long courses that they go through to learn leadership. That's one of those things that veterans understand.
Leadership and discipline, two things that you've emphasized here, lead me also to ask, are there certain occupations that veterans gravitate toward?
Wow. I would say no, not really, because let me use the Army alone. In the Army alone, we have well over, and I say that because I was in the Army, but we had over 300 different jobs in the Army, everything from doctors and dental technicians to infantrymen and artillery people, everything in between. So quite often the veteran will have that skill, and that's what they want to gravitate to when they get out. Sometimes they want a complete change, especially if you're in combat arms, because that's something that there's really not a large market for. But I would not say that there is a specific thing that veterans gravitate to. It's all an individual thing.
Well, I would have thought maybe police work or fire department, something like that.
Those are things that, especially the people that are in combat arms, tend to want to think about and do. But again, when you say those people in combat arms, only about 1 out of 6 people in the military are in combat arms. The rest are all in some type of support capacity.
And you also mentioned earlier in our conversation that there are certain employers who must, under federal or state law, I think it's federal law, that they must give a veteran preference. Do veterans often gravitate toward that kind of protection and that sort of advantage in the hiring process?
Yes, they do. We have a lot of veterans that come back that want to get a job with the federal government or with the state government. Yeah, that's a real common. They assume that there's more security there. So yes.
Well, not only
to answer your question.
Not only security, but just the advantage in having an advantage over anyone else who's applying who doesn't have the status of being a veteran.
That's true.
And do they also have advantages pay-wise, or does their military service accumulate and count toward the retirement?
Yes, to answer your question, it does count toward their retirement. Then again, that depends on the veteran. I myself, for instance, I cannot count my military service toward my retirement because I retired from the Army at 20 years. However, if you're a young veteran and you're in the service for 3 years go to the work for the state or the federal government, you can count those 3 years toward your retirement.
Just to conclude our conversation here, what advice, if you were speaking to employers as a group and to veterans as a group, first start with the employers, what would you tell them about hiring veterans?
That they need to understand a little bit about the culture that a veteran comes from. And when I say that, the only real issue with that is with the recently separated veterans. If you have a veteran, and honestly, most of the veterans we work with are not recently separated veterans, but when they're working with those recently separated veterans, employers need to try to understand where they are coming from, what they did while they were gone, what they, the culture that they came from, so they know what they're getting.
It seemed to me, know what they're getting. You mean negatively or positively?
No, positively.
Mm-hmm. And conversely, what would you tell the veteran?
What we would tell the veteran is that is real simple, because what you tell the veteran is, remember now that you're not in the military anymore. Relax. We would tell them how to use their skills to apply for specific jobs. Too many young veterans come out and they want to apply for work in the same exact way they would have attended a promotion board in the Army. They're very, very military-like, and tell them to focus on the job they're applying for.
In other words, I think I can summarize what you've just said there as don't come in, come to attention, click your heels, and throw a salute to the interviewer.
That's absolutely right. That's absolutely right. I was in an interview once where a veteran, I had two other people on the interview panel with me, and a veteran came in to interview and scared the daylights out of the other two interviewers because they had no military background at all. I knew where he was coming from. This scared them to death to interview him.
Thanks so much, Bob. Thanks
You're
for your comments.
Welcome. Thank you, and thank you for having me.
Bob Loader is Veterans Program Coordinator for Iowa Workforce Development. Coming up next, veterans transitioning into education. We'll talk with two veterans from the University of Iowa who are helping those in the military adjust to college life. Dean Borg continuing River to River now, and we're going to be speaking with two people at the University of Iowa who have a lot to do with veterans affairs and helping veterans at the University of Iowa. One is Greg Tuzani. He's president of the University of Iowa's Veterans Association. And hello, how are
Hi.
You? Greg, what is that Veterans Association?
Well, it's a student-led group that we have. John Michelson's our Vet Center coordinator, and we just really try to get student veterans involved in activities and bring them together in the community.
You mentioned John Michelson, and he's beside you here at a microphone. John, your title is Veterans Center Coordinator at the University of Iowa. Is that a university-paid staff position?
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. And My job is to not just look after the students, but also extend veteran services to faculty, staff, and family members of the university community.
Greg, how do you make contact with, you say there's a Veterans Association, but University of Iowa is a big place, 30,000 students or more. And how do you make contact and know that he or she is a veteran?
Well, that's a great question. We have a lot of different ways we do it. It's one of the hardest things for us is to actually reach out to the veterans. So we do it by email sometimes. We go through the registrar's office to send veteran-specific emails.
But they don't have a star by their name. I mean, how do you know that they have previous service?
It goes by GI Bill enrollment.
And tell me what that GI Bill is, John.
Well, the post-9/11 Education Act pays for tuition and fees for anyone who has served since 9/11 in a prorated basis depending on how long they have served. So the Guard and Reserve students also qualify for this depending on how many times they've been over.
That's a terrific benefit. And that pays tuition, is that it?
Yes, pays tuition and fees, and then they also get a living stipend based on the rank of sergeant with a family so that they can afford the rent in Iowa City.
And based on the rank of sergeant, that means if a person came out as an officer, left service as an officer, he or she takes the rank of sergeant as getting benefits as far as housing.
Right. The VA wanted to streamline the process and not have to deal with all the different grades and time in service. They just set it at a point on the scale and said sergeant with family.
And before we leave talking about the GI Bill, and we may be back talking about it again as we go along here in our discussion, but the GI Bill isn't new because when I was in school, the GI Bill, we had many men and women, mostly men at that time, coming out of World War II and particularly the Korean conflict. And the GI Bill was established then, and GIs were a significant portion of the student body.
Well, they're still an important piece of the student body, but now they represent about 1.5% of our students.
And, Greg, that 1.5% in your association, is that a membership thing? Or, you know, John is hired by the university to serve students. What do? Provide them social life?
Well, we, like I said before, we really want to do activities and just bring them together as a community because many of the veterans are older than your average college student and they may not have the same interests and they may also have families. And so it's really hard for them to relate to other students at Iowa. So we really, you know, can reach out in that way.
And that's important, isn't it? Because if they feel isolated from the rest of the student body, is that significant in their success at the University of Iowa?
I think that it is, and especially for their, like we were talking, emotional well-being and just being able to socialize with you know, when you're in the military, you have a lot of people like you around, and you have that community already that you can do activities with and similarly aged or interested people, you know, and then when you come to be a student, then you're the minority now.
But many of these people, as they have been over the past decades with the GI Bill, they come in a married status, do they not?
They do. A lot of them do. I'm one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
and that's significant, too, as far as being able to integrate with your fellow students.
Right.
And so what kind of activities?
Well, for example, on October—
What do you do to bring them together?
Right. So on October 6th, we're going to have just a family-oriented picnic in Penn Meadows Park. It's going to be free for anyone to come, veterans, Iowa veterans. They don't have to be student veterans. Mm-hmm. And we really just – it's another opportunity to get together and just mingle and maybe find somebody that you can relate to or talk to for a bit.
Let me ask you about that GI Bill that John was talking about. Is that sufficient to meet – you said you're married, you're going to school. Is that sufficient to meet everything that you need in the way of living expenses?
Well, for me personally, I'm kind of lucky because my wife works full-time and I don't work at all. I mean, I do a lot of the stuff over at the vet center, but it's not full time, you know.
What do you get a month?
For the housing stipend, I think right now it's $1,080.
$1,080 a month for housing.
Correct.
And, of course, that doesn't take in food and things like that.
Correct.
You have to have other income for that.
Right.
And it completely pays your tuition?
Yes.
And, John, what's the dropout rate? I mean, we're talking here about assimilating veterans, male and female, into the student body. But we're also saying that they have problems assimilating in a way. Am I correct on that?
Yes, we do. I don't have the specific figures on retention of students.
Well, Greg, I'm not going to ask you for the statistics. I mean, excuse me for interrupting, John, but do you see that among your fellow students that they're struggling or not?
Oh, I think that there's no one specific thing. There's a couple, I'm sure, that are having a hard time in just in the classes. I know we've seen a couple come in that John's been especially helpful in that department, coordinating with the faculty and trying to make sure that any accommodation that they've, you know, either requested through student disability or just come to him with, he really is the mediator on those types of issues.
So, John, back to you again then. What is the biggest problem? I've alluded here to dropout rate and difficulty in assimilating, but maybe that isn't the biggest problem.
It's not. The students that are here at the university are non-traditionals. They're older, married, as we've said, but they're here because they want to be here. This is not just the next stage of their evolution after high school. This is where they want to be and are spending their money. So they're pretty dedicated to succeed. Where they run into troubles is, are they still a drilling guardsman or reservist? Do they have to deploy again? Some of our students have been gone on two, maybe three deployments in the process of graduating. So that four-year model is out the window right away.
So they're not under a contract with the university on a four-year graduation, are they?
There's just no way.
I didn't even think about that they would continue to be yanked out of the classroom and back on the battlefield again.
And even those that aren't necessarily yanked to the battlefield, here in Iowa City we have a very strong medical community and some folks with the aviation units who find themselves in places like New Orleans post-hurricane. Mm-hmm. So, you know, our guardsmen and reservists are very busy serving both the state and the nation.
Greg, are there stereotypes that vets have to overcome in returning to the classroom?
I think that probably the biggest one that I hear is just the angry, you know, grumpy veteran, you know, the person that maybe the students think that this person's kind of standoffish or that they feel entitled to certain things, you know, maybe special accommodations, and mm-hmm. and maybe that makes kind of strengthens the social barrier.
What do you mean special accommodations? You mean academically special accommodations? Because I know that certain students who have special needs, be they veterans or not, get accommodations in test taking and things like that. Is that what you're speaking about?
That's the largest part of it. But even just in you know, the kind of like know it all, or you know, I'm not going to let this 22-year-old teaching assistant tell me how to do this when I've lived in the real world or something like that. You know what I mean?
You get some of that. Do you see some of that? That the older, experienced veteran.
Yes. Definitely. But I think, again, overarchingly, these people, we're military members, we're able to hold our tongue for the most part, I think. And, you know, anytime you have a difference of opinion, I mean, the most of them, you know, have that military bearing, I think.
You yourself transitioned in this way, didn't you? You have passed military service.
I did, and I came back to school at 45. as an undergrad. So I sympathize with Greg and those 22-year-old TAs. It's sometimes difficult to allow the book learning and the real life learning to coexist.
Before that, I mean, if you came back at age 45, you had significant military experience then.
Yes, I had about 25, 26 years.
Well, you were ingrained then in military life. What was the biggest problem you had in transitioning? I mean, you were very, I might say, set in your ways.
Still am. drives my wife crazy that the clock in the car is set for the 24-hour system because that's what makes sense to me.
But you came from a highly disciplined environment into an environment that is, even if you'd gone into civilian life, is less disciplined, and college might even be even less than that.
Absolutely, right down to deciding what to wear in the morning. You knew what the duty uniform was, whether it was a field outfit or your Class A's. Going to college, you see students on either side of you from business suits to pajamas. Shorts and Uggs, I believe, are the uniform of the day.
But is it a difference in students now coming to, aside from that, a difference in students coming into today's environment after having served in Iraq, Afghanistan, and other combat areas? Do you see a difference in what they are encountering and the transition they have to make other than the one you had to make as an older adult?
I think there's a mindset difference with their peers. Most of the students that they are in class with don't realize we're still at war in Afghanistan or that we still have troops in Iraq, not to mention the folks in Kosovo, the Sinai, Africa. It's not prominent on the news. It's not part of their thinking. It's just not something they're associated with.
Greg, the United States society has experienced, particularly after Vietnam, hostility toward military people and those who served in the military. Do you encounter any of that in today's society as a student?
In my experience, no. Iowa, the state as a whole, the school, everybody here seems really, maybe they may not be pro-conflict, but they're definitely very supportive of veterans. That's all I've met so far.
I think we're more likely to run across apathy than hostility.
And is there a desire, though, Greg, to understand? No, I may not understand, but do they even want to know, your fellow students?
I think that I had to take a rhetoric class, which is a first year, all 18-year-olds in my class, and I always assumed that they understand what, they say, oh, you were in the service, which one? And then that's the final question. Oh, okay, well then, if you were in the Army, you had to be a ground pounder. If you were in the Marine Corps, you had to be, up to your neck in mud, and what I mean? They just have these visions in their head, but, there's different jobs in every branch, Not everybody is going to be frontline warrior, or not everybody's going to be, an admin lawyer or something.
Does that bother you that people don't fully appreciate what you have been through, the training that you have, the experience that you have, and that you're thrust into a classroom with a person who's just out of high school?
I guess it does bother me a little bit. I mean, in the military, we get to wear our achievements on our chest, and nobody has to ask you for them to know. They just look at you, and you have your badges, and you have your rank, and they don't eat. You could see somebody across the parking lot and go, okay, he's combat infantry, But then when you're in the classroom, I had somebody say that they thought I was 18 just like them. I'm like, I have gray hair. How can I be 18? But we're all on the same, like you said, we're all in the same playing field once we get back. So I may as well be 18 because I'm going to be treated the same.
John, is this position that you have as a Veterans Center coordinator, is that something that you created and the university said, yes, that's a good idea, you're on our payroll?
In part. Larry Lockwood, the registrar, and Skip Kempnich, who was the certifying official for the GI Bill, resurrected a position that we used to have in the post-Vietnam era. And myself and a couple other students stood up the student organization and had an office to connect people with. But my last duty assignment before I retired from the Army was keeping the armory open in Washington, Iowa. So the day-to-day, making sure the soldiers are enrolled for health care, making sure their pay is straight, making sure people get fed, that there was fuel in the vehicles. This is a continuation of that kind of taking care of the troops. Mm-hmm. Have all of the returning students registered for VA health care? Do they all understand that after you leave a combat zone, you have 5 years of free care at the VA? And if there's anything wrong with you, let's get it documented now so the VA will take care of it for the rest of your life. Do they understand that if they do have a disability, a hearing loss from working around the generators, damage to a leg from being a parachutist, that there is fiscal compensation from the federal government?
You know, for athletes, there are academic counseling sessions. I mean, somebody really looks after individual athletes to make sure that they're making progress academically so that they can stay academically eligible for athletics. Do you do such a thing for veterans?
I do to some degree. It's also done at the registrar's office and in our veterans GI Bill office. Dennis Harps and David Johnson also look at these things. And as a team, we look at who's best situated to help which students in what situation.
So you monitor veterans' grades in order to make sure that they are made, if they're struggling, they're made aware that you can help.
If we determine that a student is struggling, then we'll look. We don't just routinely pull grades and look at
things. It's also important. There's a grade point that you have to maintain for the GI Bill to pay you. So, I mean, it's, you know, every vet student, if they're not aware of that at the time that they start on the GI Bill, they will at some point be made aware.
Veterans coming out, Greg, have a wide variety of options. They can go to a community college. They can go to a four-year university like you are here at the University of Iowa. Mm-hmm. They also have online options now.
Right.
How did you choose, and what do you see people, how do they evaluate those choices?
Well, while I was active duty, I did some online college. And when I went to get out, I was faced with the choice, do I do community college? A lot of people do community college to get their grade point average up, and then they come to a big university like Iowa. Well, my choice was, well, if I'm going to do that, let me just apply to Iowa first. If they say no, then I'll go the Kirkwood route. So,
John?
On the national level, a lot of active component soldiers and sailors and airmen start with the online programs because they see it as promotion points. Mm-hmm. The better schools will have them working towards a degree program. Other schools are just helping them get points.
Is that generally how people approach higher education? They start, get the grade point up in some other way, then come to Iowa State University or the University of Iowa?
Yeah, I think so, especially, you know, you want to look at what is this degree going to get me, you know, when you're thinking about college. How is it going to affect my bottom line? So they want to – I think that anyone in Iowa would – any veteran coming to Iowa would be thinking, well, I want to be able to make a good salary when I get out. So,
do you also correlate what you're doing here with what's happening on other campuses such as Iowa State, UNI, maybe the private colleges in Iowa? John, do you do that, or maybe at the University of Illinois? Do you have any networking?
Actually, we have a statewide ACME. Which is an association of college and military educators. Iowa State has hired someone like me last spring, Jathan Chacon, mm-hmm. and UNI is currently advertising for this position. So it is a common thing, and Iowa is not the only state doing it.
Anything you want to add before we conclude our conversation?
I just want to say I have a lot of friends in a lot of different schools across the country. And I talk to them frequently about the different things that are offered here. And I, out of just talking to them, they all say, like, man, maybe I should have gone to Iowa. But, I mean, all these states, that I feel like the initiatives are there, they're starting, but maybe not as far along as we are at Iowa.
Let me just ask you, what's ahead for you after the University of Iowa? What's your major?
It'll be finance and accounting. Currently, I'm pre-business. I'm not yet a TIPI student, but I think I'm going to try for the Master's in Accountancy program, and then, well, that's far enough away that I don't have a...
Did your past military experience have any paving of the road here at the University of Iowa in choosing your academic endeavors and your future career?
Not in choosing my major, no. I think that any type of military experience, which, you know, you get the attention to detail, you get the task-oriented behavior. So I think it helped me out as a student, but not necessarily, you know, to focus on business. I know tons of the vets down at the lounge, for example, are engineers. I think the large majority of the vets we have returning are engineering majors. But
Was it a good choice? Has this been an easy road for you because of the benefits that you have in prior service and the GI Bill? Has this been better than having come to the University of Iowa out of high school?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I was able to know what I wanted to do before I started. I've been in classes, freshman classes, where the kids are in there saying, like, oh, if this class is too hard, I'll just drop it. Or, you know, I'll take this class, and if I like it, then maybe I'll major in that. But me, I have a plan, and that's what I'm going to do.
Thank you. It's been good talking with you. Greg Tuzani is president of the University of Iowa Veterans Association. John Michelson is coordinator of the Veterans Center at the University of Iowa. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Dean.
Thank you for having us.
River to River is produced by Catherine Perkins and Emily Woodbury. Podcasting and on-demand audio of River to River are available at iowapublicradio.org. And we always welcome your comments and questions about the program. Contact us anytime by going to rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music, composed and performed by the River Monks. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio.